content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is All About Pets. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times, the Washington Post, Yahoo.com, Cats Are Online, and Dogster Online. On today's program, we'll start with an article from the New York Times titled The New Family Portrait Has Four Legs and a Tail by Dori Chevlin. Commissioned pet portraits have been around for centuries, but now they're reaching a much wider clientele. Like many of their generation in the South, Tanya and Larry Smith, both 69, commissioned oil paintings depicting each of their six grandchildren, the girls wearing frilly dresses, the boys in slacks. But only one portrait currently hangs in their Valdosta, Georgia home, and its subject is naked. It's so strange because I never would have done this in the past. I don't know what prompted us, but we did it, Ms. Smith said of the painting she commissioned of their King Charles Spaniel Rusty, who passed away in November. Humans have long depicted animals in art. The horses, stags, and aurochs of Lascaux Cave date back 17,000 years. But the transition to animal as subject, to pet as subject, not just a cat, but rather my cat, is more recent, said Dr. Julia Ronson, curator at the Cincinnati Art Museum. Starting with a few artists depicting pets in the 17th century, by the 19th century, there's a greater emphasis on companion animals, she said. One of the best-known portraits of art, Queen Victoria commissioned hundreds of lithographs, paintings, and enamel miniatures of her dogs. And artists like George Stubbs built careers painting people's horses. But today, pet portraiture engages not just members of the economic and art world elite, but everyday people honoring their own Fidos and Fluffies. I don't have art of my relatives. There is no hard data on the number of people commissioning portraits of their pets, but Google Trend data from the last 10 years show a steadily growing interest. Searches for custom pet portrait alone were up 90% over the period. And portrait societies in both the United States and England confirm they've seen more of their members branching out into the discipline. Why so many people are now hanging paintings, prints, and illustrations depicting their pets speaks to the changing relationship between humans and their animals. Maitri Modi, a content creator based in Portland, Maine, paid for chemotherapy for her 13-year-old pug, Ari, who was diagnosed with cancer earlier this year. A few decades ago, that may have been unthinkable, but globally, pet owners have taken to treating animals more like humans, investing not only in their medical care, but also grooming, supplements, and entertainment. Ms. Modi has ample pictures of loved ones in her phone and in photo albums, but it is Ari who she has elevated into decor. I don't have any art of my relatives, Ms. Modi said, but for her, Ari is family. Through a painful divorce, career changes, and multiple geographic moves, he's been my rock. She said, he's brought me so much joy and stability over the years. Several prints and drawings of Ari hang from her walls, interspersed with other pieces from her travels. I like to make it whimsical, but not just a wall of pug art. In San Francisco, Kelsey Rudy, a 36-year-old accountant, has taken a similar approach. She recently commissioned a mixed-media painting of her new dog, Bodie, from the artist Andrea Caceres. A print of her late dog, Yoda, that she received as a gift, hangs on another wall. She has also hung a tiny, tiny picture of herself and her boyfriend. The dogs take up a lot more square footage, she said. A painter's dream job. For a working artist, pet portraiture can make for a reliable career in a way that other art forms cannot. Ben Lonovitz stumbled upon his pet portrait career. He's been invited to an art fair in Osaka, where he was supposed to paint New York landmarks onto cardboard. Then this older woman had a printout of a photo of her cat, and she just showed me the cat, and she's like, "This is my best friend. Can you paint it?" He said it was such a positive experience. When he came back to New York, he offered a donation-based pet portrait session at the home decor store Fish's Eddie, where he's since become the resident artist every weekend. "I did like 30 paintings that day, and I had more money than I'd ever had in my pocket," he said. With human portraiture, someone may commission a painting of their spouse or child or grandchild just once. But, said Anthony Barkham, a painter in Middleburg, Virginia, the pets kind of dive regularly, so some customers end up returning for several commissions over the years. And while human portraiture represents an obvious legacy value, pet portraits could have better resale value, says Barham. I have some clients and collectors who have vast quantities of old paintings of dogs and cats and things, just because it's a dog or a cat, he said. You wouldn't put up someone's grandmother up there. Still, while more people may be hanging images of their pets, some traditional portrait authorities assert that humans remain the more prestigious subject. Members of the Royal Society of Portrait Painters are reluctant to take on pet portrait commissions, despite the growing interest, says Anthony Connolly, the group's president. I think the portrait painters have a kind of self-regard. If you like it, that it would be slightly beneath them to do pets, he said. Jennifer Gennari experienced a similar attitude while studying painting at the Florence Academy of Art. Painting animals or having an interest in doing anything with animals was not something people were interested in. It was almost like less than doing still life, she said. It really suppressed my interest in doing anything with animals. Now Ms. Gennari lists several celebrities among her pet portrait commissioners and charges between a few hundred dollars to $20,000, depending on the scope of the piece. Artists now acknowledge that pet portraits can be a more accessible genre to break into. The problem with portraits of people is everyone has a different view of what someone looks like. There's a lot of ego involved. So it's really a minefield, said Mr. Barham. Whereas a pet, generally everyone has the same view of the pet. Perhaps inevitably, a rising interest in pet portraits has coincided with a rise in online pet portrait generating companies. For as little as $29, you can upload a photo of your pet onto any number of sites. At Paw and Glory, they will put your cat into an admiral's jacket. At Pawbell, you can get your dog's face embroidered on a hoodie, t-shirt, or tote. Reed Laylor, co-founder of Mod Paws, said many of his customers commission digital pet portraits as gifts. Of the roughly 20,000 portraits they sell each year, about 10,000 are purchased between November and December. Especially during the busy season, we're hiring up to probably 50 people, Mr. Laylor said, most of them based in the Philippines and churning out at least one portrait an hour. The artists use Adobe InDesign to build portraits from the photos customers upload to the site, with prices ranging from $25 for a digital file of one pet to $113 for three pets depicted in a 16x12-inch print. Poignant mementos. Mr. and Mrs. Smith reached out to the artist Eric's daughter when they learned Rusty had cancer. A specialist in commemorative acrylic paintings, Miss Eric's daughter had a year-long wait list, but the Smiths were willing to wait until Rusty underwent chemotherapy. They finally received the portrait from their framer the same day Rusty died. For the longest time, I thought, I just don't really know if I can look at it every day, said Miss Smith. We didn't hang it right away. But now, she said, it's just a joy to be able to see it and remember him. Beyond her portraits, Miss Modi also has a tattoo of Ari on her wrist and a custom coffee table in his likeness. Her favorite piece is a painting by Sally Muir, painted live at a session in an anthropology store in London. Ari died a few days before this story published, and Miss Modi is grateful to have the painting. Every time I look at it, it reminds me of that day when he was 3 years old and we were in London, Miss Modi said. It's one of my most beautiful memories. Next, we'll move on to an article from the Washington Post titled Ask a Vet. These household items could kill your pet. What to know about some of the most common and deadly indoor household toxins by Jane Sykes. My cat loves to graze on houseplants and cut flowers, and sometimes vomits within an hour or two afterward. Is it okay to let her do this? Are there other household poisons I should be worried about? As Easter has happened, the potential is that your cat or dog will be exposed to toxins from cut flowers, chocolate, and potted plants like sago palms increases. But the danger household items pose to pets goes well beyond the spring holiday season. Other things that can make your pet sick include raisins, ibuprofen, and pennies. For some poisons, delaying a visit to the vet by just hours can be the difference between life and death. The list of potential poisons for pets is long, but here's what you need to know about some of the most common and deadly indoor household toxins. Cats. Although the range of poisons for cats tends to be narrower than for dogs, in part because most cats are fussier about what they eat, Cats tend to have worse outcomes because they are much more sensitive to poisons than our dogs and people. Lilies. Lily plants, including day lilies, stargazer lilies, Asiatic lilies, tiger lilies, Easter lilies, and Oriental lilies, are extremely poisonous for cats. Just a nibble on a leaf or petal can lead to rapid kidney damage with loss of appetite, vomiting, hypersalivation, lethargy, and sometimes neurological signs such as stumbling, tremors, and seizures. Although cats usually recover if treated within 24 to 48 hours of exposure, once kidney failure develops, many affected cats will die. According to Larry Cowgill, a professor of veterinary nephrology at the University of California at Davis, even pollen, stamens, and petals that drop from shelves can be toxic. If a cat just walks through pollen and licks its paws, kidney failure and death can follow, he said. Over-the-counter pain medications. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, especially ibuprofen, Advil, are also toxic to cats. Just sucking on an ibuprofen caplet could lead to rapid kidney failure and death. Because of the tend to produce flavored medications for pets, we've been treating more and more cats that get into NSAIDs for dogs, like carprofen, Cowgill said. Cats are also very susceptible to acetaminophen, Tylenol poisoning, which causes liver damage and impairs the ability of blood to carry oxygen. Methemoglobinemia. Affected cats have brown, yellow, or muddy-colored gums and develop weakness, respiratory distress, and sometimes swelling of the face and paws. There is no safe dose of acetaminophen for cats. Just 50 milligrams can be a cause enough for death. Flea and tick medications for dogs. Pyrethroids, such as paramethrin, which are present in some flea and tick medications labeled for use only in dogs, are toxic for cats. Even having contact with a dog in the household that has been treated with a spot-on topical product can cause a cat to have neurological signs, usually tremors, shaking, and salivation. Dogs. Because dogs will pretty much eat anything, they are more likely to be poisoned than cats. Around 90% of cases reported to the Pet Poison Helpline are dogs. Grapes and raisins. Ingestion of grapes and raisins can cause kidney injury in dogs. Although, according to Stephen Epstein, a professor of emergency and critical care at the University of California at Davis, most treated dogs have a good prognosis. Some dogs eat a large numbers of grapes or raisins with no problems. Others can die after eating less than a handful of raisins. As with lilies and cats, though, once kidney injury develops, only about half of the dogs will survive. For decades, how grapes and raisins cause kidney failure in dogs has been a mystery. Investigations for mycotoxins, heavy metals, pesticides, and tannins have been, well, fruitless. Recently, the Pet Poison Helpline identified an identical illness in dogs that ingested large amounts of cream of tartar. One dog ate homemade Play-Doh, or tamarind pods or paste, used in Southeast Asian dishes. The common thread is tartaric acid, which is in cream of tartar, tamarind pods, and grapes and raisins. In fact, cream of tartar is a byproduct of winemaking. Variations in how individual dogs react to tartrates might explain why some dogs can safely ingest grapes and raisins while others die. Xylitol. This sweetener found in baked goods, chewing gum, mints, peanut butter, diet bars, drink powders, and some human dental products, such as toothpaste and mouthwash, can cause low blood sugar levels and liver failure, with lethargy, vomiting, and weakness typically developing within 24 hours. Other foods, chocolate, especially dark chocolate, onions, and garlic also can cause severe illness. Onions and garlic are most likely to create problems in small dogs. I once treated a chihuahua with onion toxicity after it ate a large quantity of Chinese takeout. Human medications. As with cats, ibuprofen or acetaminophen can be toxic for dogs, although higher doses are typically needed to cause illness. Other problematic human medications include vitamin D supplements, estrogen creams, antidepressants, and other prescription drugs, and recreational drugs including cannabis and amphetamines. Potted sago plants. Although seeds of these popular houseplants are the most toxic, dogs can be poisoned when they ingest any part of the plant. Just mouthing on a frond could lead to death. Signs can develop within hours and include lethargy, decreased appetite, vomiting, and diarrhea, which can be severe and bloody, indications of liver failure, and in several cases, neurological signs such as stumbling or seizures. Rat bait. Most rat baits contain compounds that stop the blood from clotting, anticoagulant rodenticides such as bromomethylin, but some contain vitamin D3, cloacalciferol. Baits that contain vitamin D3 cause calcium levels to rise in the blood, which in turn causes mineralization of tissues and death, effectively turning animals into stone. Pets can die after ingesting the bait itself or the poison rats. Zinc. Ingestion of zinc-containing objects leads to red blood cell damage and anemia. Pennies minted after 1982 are the most common household source of zinc, but it's found in other objects as well. We recently saw a dog with zinc poisoning after eating a metal Monopoly piece. How are poisoned pets treated? Veterinarians usually treat dogs and cats that have ingested household poisons with intravenous fluid therapy and gastrointestinal decontamination, including vomiting with medications and giving a slurry of activated charcoal. For animals with severe toxicities, dialysis can be used to treat kidney failure as well as to extract poisonous substances from the blood, preventing further damage. Depending on the poison, other treatments and supportive care measures, such as oxygen and blood product transfusions, might be needed. How can I reduce the chance that my pet is poisoned? Familiarize yourself with the top 20 poisons for dogs and cats in your state and keep them out of reach. If you prefer fresh flowers and live indoor plants to artificial ones, look for florists with pet-friendly offerings, which can be found online. Choose these if you want to send gifts to friends, family, or colleagues who might own pets, too. Always keep pet medication and human medications locked in a cabinet. Dispense them over a sink. If they do happen to drop on the floor, pick them up immediately. Give pets human medications only if you've been prescribed by your vet. If you have both dogs and cats, use products only on dogs only if they are also safe for cats. Check the label if you bought it from a pet store or online. Should your pet get sick and there's a chance of toxicity, call your vet or a pet poison helpline immediately and follow their advice. If you can't get help over the phone, take your pet to a 24-hour emergency clinic. Next, we'll move on to an article from Yahoo.com titled, "Are Classroom Pets Really a Good Fit for Schools?" by Sammy Caramella. Classroom pets once seemed to be a rite of passage. They live in their tank in a classroom filled with children for most of the year. On weekends or holidays, they get to relocate to the home of one lucky student. But how humane is this age-old concept? We spoke with animal welfare experts about their opinions on the matter. I'll keep reading to help you learn more about the educational upsides and welfare concerns of classroom pets. Are classroom pets humane? Not all classroom pets are considered humane. This depends on a variety of factors, from the type of animal to the level of care provided. In my experience, classroom pets can absolutely be humanely kept, but only when the decision is intentional and grounded in a real understanding of the animal's needs, says Dr. Joe Myers, a veterinarian on Vetster. Sometimes pets receive better care within a classroom environment than in a home environment. I don't see classroom versus home as the deciding factor for welfare, Myers explains. I've seen pets in homes that aren't getting what they need, and I've seen classroom pets that are exceptionally well cared for. Each setting has its own challenges and advantages. A social pet in a home where everyone is gone all day may struggle, while a classroom can offer more interaction and shared responsibility. Of course, classroom pets require extra care when class is not in session, she says. For example, someone must take the animal on weekends and holidays. Depending on the type of animal, this can feel disorienting for the pet. The real question isn't where the pet lives, it's whether the adults involved truly understand the animal's physical, environmental, and behavioral needs and can meet them consistently in that setting, says Myers. Benefits versus concerns of classroom pets. There are many educational benefits of classroom pets, especially among children who are taught hands-on care. When it's done thoughtfully, there's real educational value, says Myers. Kids don't just learn empathy and responsibility, they also learn what proper animal care actually looks like. That includes understanding daily husbandry, recognizing signs of illness, and even learning about the role of veterinary care. Of course, there are also some risks associated with classroom pets, including hygiene concerns, student allergies, and stress. Hygiene is important both from a general cleanliness standpoint and because some animals can carry zoonotic diseases, Meyer says. Allergies are another big consideration. Animal dander, bedding, and certain feeds can trigger reactions in sensitive children. When it comes to animal welfare, schools must ensure that classroom pets are emotionally supported and supervised at all times. Adults should teach children appropriate boundaries and supervise their interactions. Many classroom pets are prey species, and a busy, noisy environment with frequent handling can be overwhelming, says Myers. That's why it's essential that any classroom pet has the ability to opt out of interaction at any time. Proper hiding spaces and retreat areas aren't optional. They're a necessity. What animals make the best classroom pets? According to Myers, some pets are better equipped for classrooms than others. These include fish, certain reptiles, small mammals like hamsters or guinea pigs, and even insects. Generally, species that do well are those that needs are relatively self-contained within a properly set up enclosure. They don't rely heavily on having a strong bond with a primary caregiver, she says. It's also easier for everyone if they don't need care over the weekend. Myers also noted that classroom pets don't always need to provide an interactive experience. Look but don't touch animals can actually be a better fit in many cases, especially from a welfare and safety standpoint, she says. What animals should not be classroom pets? While certain animals make great classroom pets, others might not do well in such a high-energy environment. For example, a cat or dog is likely far too complicated to have as a shared pet. There are definitely animals that are not good fit for classrooms, usually because their needs are too complex, too fragile, or too risky, Myers says. According to Myers, such animals include those who are sensitive to handling or stress or require specialized care. Additionally, avoid animals that pose a bite or injury risk or those that are young, ill, or immunocompromised. In these cases, it's less about the animal itself and more about whether the environment can realistically support that level of care, she says. Should your class get a classroom pet? If you're a teacher considering a classroom pet for your students, make sure you think through all the potential risks and concerns before committing to the idea. The bottom line for me is that a classroom pet should never be an impulse or a tradition that's carried forward without thought. It should be a deliberate decision based on a clear understanding of that animal's needs, says Myers. If you can confidently meet the pet's physical, environmental, and behavioral needs, including giving it the ability to retreat and feel safe, then a classroom pet can be a positive experience for everyone involved. If not, it's better to find other ways to teach those the same lessons without putting an animal in a situation where it cannot thrive. Next, we'll move on to an article on Dogster.com titled, Ways to Stop Dog Boredom Before It Destroys Your House, by Dan Seymour. Your dog is staring at you. They've paced between the door and the couch. They've sighed dramatically from their bed. The message is clear. They're bored, and it's somehow your problem to solve. A bored dog doesn't just sulk. They chew furniture, bark excessively, dig up the yard, or find creative ways to destroy your belongings. Mental and physical stimulation isn't optional for dogs. It's essential. The amount they need depends on the breed, age, energy level, and health, but every dog needs something to do. Here are 10 simple ways to keep your dog entertained, whether you're stuck indoors during bad weather or just needs ideas for daily enrichment. 1. Create a scavenger hunt. Hide small piles of kibble or treats around the house before you leave for the day. Tell your dog to find them, then make them work for it. You can use an entire meal's worth of kibble so they have to search for their breakfast or dinner. This turns your departure into something positive instead of anxiety-inducing. Your dog associates you leaving with the fun hunt that follows. 2. Use food puzzles. Food puzzles make dogs work for rewards. Fill one with kibble or treats and let them figure it out. If you're willing to invest in a few different styles, rotate them so your dog doesn't get bored solving the same puzzle repeatedly. These toys provide mental stimulation that tires dogs out effectively as physical exercise. 3. Stuff treats into toys. Kong toys or treat balls work similarly to puzzles but are easier to solve. Fill a Kong with plain yogurt or peanut butter and freeze it. Your dog will spend ages trying to extract the reward. A frozen Kong can keep an energetic dog occupied for hours, making it perfect for times when you need them settled. 4. Play hide and seek. Have your dog sit and stay. Go hide somewhere in the house or yard. Once you're in position, call your dog to come find you. When they succeed, reward them with a treat and tons of praise. You can play this repeatedly for as long as they're interested. It combines obedience training with physical activity and problem solving. 5. Work on obedience training. Teaching new commands or reinforcing old ones gives dogs a mental workout. Just 10 minutes of focused training can tire them out significantly. Work on basics like sit, stay down, and come. Once they've mastered those, move to more complex tricks like roll over, play dead, or fetch specific items. Dogs that regularly learn new things stay mentally engaged and less prone to boredom-driven destruction. 6. Change their toys regularly. Dogs get bored with the same toys every day, especially worn or broken ones. Rotate toys every few weeks instead of leaving everything out constantly. When old toys reappear after being stored, they feel new again. You can also introduce genuinely new toys periodically to keep things fresh. 7. Teach them to tidy up. Train your dog to put their toys in a basket or bin. Start by holding a toy over the container and asking them to drop it. Reward them with treats when they do. Eventually have them pick toys up from the floor and place them in the basket. This takes patience to teach, but once they learn it, you can expand the skill to other tasks like putting dirty clothes in the laundry basket. 8. Set up solo play games. Create games your dog can play independently. Attach a tug toy or something stationary so they can pull whenever they want. Teach them to drop their ball downstairs or roll it down a hallway so they can chase it. These work well when you're busy, but your dog needs activity. 9. Use a snuffle mat. Snuffle mats mimic grassy fields with varied textures. Hide treats or kibble throughout the mat and let your dog search for them. The sniffing and foraging satisfies natural instincts while keeping them busy. A well-packed snuffle mat can occupy your dog for significant periods. 10. Give them extra attention. Sometimes your dog wants most simply is you. Spend time giving belly rubs, starting a grooming session, or just sitting together. Many dogs enjoy being brushed, and you'll keep their coat healthy in the process. Bonding time is meaningful interaction that prevents boredom and strengthens your relationship. The weather factor. Outdoor play is ideal, but the weather doesn't always cooperate. Rain, extreme heat, or freezing temperatures can trap you indoors for days. Having indoor enrichment options ready prevents cabin fever for both you and your dog. Mix mental and physical activities. A dog who just spent 20 minutes solving food puzzles might be just as tired as one who ran around the yard for 20 minutes. Preventing destructive boredom. Bored dogs become destructive dogs quickly. Chewed furniture, shredded pillows, torn up yards, and constant barking all stem from insufficient stimulation. Prevention is easier than dealing with the damage. Building entertainment into your dog's daily routine instead of treating it as an occasional bonus. Consistency matters more than grand gestures. 10 minutes of training daily beats an hour-long play session once a week. The bottom line, keeping your dog entertained doesn't require elaborate setups or expensive equipment. Simple activities like scavenger hunts, hide-and-seek, and training sessions provide the mental and physical stimulation dogs crave. Pay attention to what your dog enjoys most. Some dogs love food puzzles, while others prefer interactive play. Some want solo activities, while others need your direct involvement. Experiment with different options from this list to figure out what works best. The effort you put in prevents boredom, pays off in a happier, calmer, better-behaved dog. And honestly, a tired dog makes for a more peaceful household for everyone. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. All About Pets is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.